During the past year, the G8 and G20 nations met to coordinate their plans for preventing a global financial meltdown. Many of those governments used stimulus packages that pumped $5 trillion worth of taxpayer money into the global economy. This meeting will be different. Part of the focus will be on strategies for withdrawing government support and allowing the private sector to reassert itself as the engine of world economic growth. Experts warn this approach could lead to inflation if not done in a careful and coordinated fashion. The director of the G20 Research Group at the University of Toronto, John Curtin, says stimulus packages have lifted economies and provided some employment, but they have also increased large deficits in the United States and many other industrialized countries.
Government debt has just ballooned, imposing a very large burden on taxpayers, and that could be especially large if interest rates start to go back up again, as they no doubt will. And, of course, at some point, investors may just say, well, I don't think I'll buy government bonds anymore to finance this debt, because I'm just not sure if even the biggest or best governments that we could always trust in the past, the United States, will actually be in a position to pay those bonds back. So you may have the lenders of the world simply going on strike. It's also said that all of the world's savings still are not large enough to buy the deficits that the U.S. alone is going to produce over the next 10 years. So for that reason alone, the stimulus has got to come off.
Curtin says among the countries supporting continued stimulus is China.
China's key interest is to stay the course on stimulus so the global economy grows, so China can export its way to prosperity again and keep jobs for all of its peasants flowing into the cities at home, so they won't face riots on the street and social instability, which could challenge the political regime.
Curtin says China and India have their own interest in the G20 meeting. They want their voting power increased at the World Bank and International Monetary Fund to reflect the growth and weight of their economies.
We at present have a world where China has about the same weight in the IMF as Belgium, and nobody believes that that's a sound formula for having the IMF work effectively and for adequately reflecting the people who have got the money, China with its $2 trillion in exchange reserves. But we still see extraordinary resistance from the old European powers, who are massively overrepresented, who are given big chunks of the vote back in the world of 1944, but who have been overtaken by the emerging economies.
China is also suggesting an alternative to the dollar as the primary world monetary unit of trade. That's because the value of its investments in the United States drop when the dollar loses value. China is suggesting a new multilateral reserve currency composed of a basket of currencies. The United States, on the other hand, is opposed to any replacement for the dollar. Curtin says the issue of trade imbalances between the United States and China will also likely come up for discussion. He says with Americans saving more, it's not clear if U.S. consumers will return to buying imports in large enough numbers to jumpstart the global economy. He says Chinese consumers could take over that role if they were encouraged to invest in Western stock markets rather than domestic ones tightly controlled by Beijing. Curtin says if China can be persuaded to make its currency convertible so the exchange rate will float, Chinese consumers will have more money to purchase goods from abroad when the yuan rises in value. Curtin says another way to curb imbalances involves letting China's state-owned enterprises buy domestic U.S. assets, including companies, land, and oil. He says that way U.S. money in China will be recycled back to the United States. But many U.S. policymakers remain wary of allowing government-backed foreign companies invest in the United States, and applicants are considered on a case-by-case basis. Representing African interest in Pittsburgh will be the G20 member South Africa and representatives of the African Union. But Curtin says African policymakers will be watching. Export-led growth in Africa depends on the recovery of industrialized countries, including the ability of the banks to make loans and consumers to buy African exports. Policymakers are also looking for progress to be made in completing the Doha talks on liberalizing world trade. If successful, they could open Western markets to African goods and lower subsidies to U.S. and European farmers, which make their produce cheaper for African countries to import than to grow their own food. I'm William Eagle in Washington.